The Treasure of the Humble by Maurice Maeterlinck. Narrated by George Easton. Silence. Silence and secrecy, cries Carlyle. Altars might still be raised to them, were this an altar-building time, for universal worship. Silence is the element in which great things fashion themselves together, that at length they may emerge, full-formed and majestic, into the daylight of life, which they are henceforth to rule. Not William the Silent only, but all the considerable men I have known, and the most undiplomatic and unstrategic of these, forbore to babble of what they were creating and projecting. Nay, in thy own mean perplexities, do thou thyself but hold thy tongue for one day, on the morrow how much clearer are thy purposes and duties, what wreck and rubbish have these mute workmen within thee swept away, when intrusive noises were shut out. Speech is too often not, as the Frenchmen defined it, the art of concealing thought, but of quite stifling and suspending thought, so that there is none to conceal. Speech, too, is great, but not the greatest. As the Swiss inscription says, Sprechen ist silbern, Schweigen ist golden, speech is silver, silence is golden, or, as I might rather express it, speech is of time, silence is of eternity. Bees will not work except in darkness, thought will not work except in silence, neither will virtue work except in secrecy. It is idle to think that, by means of words, any real communication can ever pass from one man to another. The lips or the tongue may represent the soul, even as a cipher or a number may represent a picture of Memling, but from the moment that we have something to say to each other, we are compelled to hold our peace, and if at such times we do not listen to the urgent commands of silence, invisible though they be, we shall have suffered an eternal loss that all the treasures of human wisdom cannot make good, for we shall have let slip the opportunity of listening to another soul, and of giving existence, be it only for an instant, to our own, and many lives there are in which such opportunities do not present themselves twice. It is only when life is sluggish within us that we speak, only at moments when reality lies far away, and we do not wish to be conscious of our brethren. And no sooner do we speak than something warns us that the divine gates are closing. Thus it comes about that we hug silence to us, and are very misers of it, and even the most reckless will not squander it on the first comer. There is an instinct of the superhuman truths within us which warns us that it is dangerous to be silent with one whom we do not wish to know, or do not love, for words may pass between men, but let silence have had its instant of activity, and it will never efface itself, and indeed the true life, the only life that leaves a trace behind, is made up of silence alone. Bethink it well, in that silence to which you must again have recourse, so that it may explain itself, by itself, and if it be granted to you to descend for one moment into your soul, into the depths where the angels dwell, it is not the words spoken by the creature you loved so dearly that you will recall, or the gestures that he made, but it is, above all, the silences that you have lived together that will come back to you, for it is the quality of those silences that alone revealed the quality of your love and your souls. So far I have considered active silence only, for there is a passive silence, which is the shadow of sleep, of death or non-existence. It is the silence of lethargy, and is even less to be dreaded than speech, so long as it slumbers, but beware lest a sudden incident awake it, for then would its brother, the great active silence, at once rear himself upon his throne. Be on your guard. Two souls would draw near each other, the barriers would fall asunder, the gates fly open, and the life of every day be replaced by a life of deepest earnest, wherein all are defenseless, a life in which laughter dares not show itself, in which there is no obeying, in which nothing can evermore be forgotten. And it is because we all of us know of this somber power and its perilous manifestations, that we stand in so deep a dread of silence. We can bear, when need must be, the silence of ourselves, that of isolation, but the silence of many, silence multiplied, and above all the silence of a crowd, these are supernatural burdens, whose inexplicable weight brings dread to the mightiest soul. We spend a goodly portion of our lives in seeking places where silence is not. No sooner have two or three men met than their one thought is to drive away the invisible enemy, and of how many ordinary friendships may it not be said that their only foundation is the common hatred of silence? And if, all efforts notwithstanding, it contrives to steal among a number of men, disquiet will fall upon them, and their restless eyes will wander in the mysterious direction of things unseen, and each man will hurriedly go his way, flying before the intruder, and henceforth they will avoid each other, dreading lest a similar disaster should again befall them, and suspicious as to whether there be not one among them who would treacherously throw open the gate to the enemy. In the lives of most of us, it will not happen more than twice or thrice that silence is really understood and freely admitted. It is only on the most solemn occasions that the